Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, Health Matters, presented by SSM Health. Here's your host, KMOX Health Editor, Fred Bottomer.
Hi there, and thanks for joining us again. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Lots to talk about over the next hour, including how to manage your diet over the holidays. We'll also talk about how to manage holiday depression. Plus, we'll talk with a pediatrician about the dangers of the RSV virus in infants over the winter months. But first, let's start today's show the way we always do, with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchhold. Dr. Buchhold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchhold, hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for coming in again.
Thanks for having me.
A recent poll just came out from the American College of Emergency Physicians, suggesting that a majority of Americans are unprepared to help in case of a medical emergency. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's, I'm not surprised. And, you know, I think, you know, public health measures have come a long way, which is great. At the same token, I think at least it's always scary when you see somebody ill and it can cause panic. And that always makes people, if you're not trained or experienced, it can make people freeze. And I've seen physicians do that. I think a couple things that are helpful to know, basic life support are always talks about the ABCs, you know, airway, breathing, and circulation. Nowadays, they'll say when somebody has cardiac arrest, you always want to look at circulation first. So a couple tips. One is if somebody's having a hard time breathing, you always want to kind of make sure they're choking or not choking, I should say. Well, I should say you want to make sure if they're choking to do something about it, such as a Heimlich maneuver. But they're having a hard time breathing. There's some simple things you can at least look at to see. Sometimes it's just related to posture. So if they, you know, they're kind of had their chin forward and for some reason something's happened that they can't stabilize or keep their head up, you know, you may want to look at that. Or if they've fallen and they're, you know, the airway's obstructed anyway, I wouldn't recommend sticking your hand in there unless you really saw something there. But if there is some obvious obstruction externally, trying to deal with that sometimes helps. The most common thing is when you see somebody with what we call cardiac arrest, their heart stops beating. If you don't know anything to do, at the minimum, initiating compressions to the chest as quickly as possible has a benefit. I was just having out with a friend recently, and his father-in-law had that happen in his home, and his wife, thankfully, knew to press on his chest and made it to the hospital and was out at home walking and talking and doing well, when the odds of surviving that are less than 1%. So these interventions really can help. I know at a lot of malls now they have the CPR practice machines, which kind of in a weird, macabre way my kids like to go to and use. I'm not sure how I feel about that. But, you know, just pressing on somebody's chest and pushing in a repeated manner with your arms locked will go a long way. In most public places, if people have if they go into cardiac arrest, there's the electronic defibrillators. And those are pretty user-friendly. And so whenever you see that, that's probably something you want to ask for. And if there's multiple people around, having somebody find one is great. And then always, you know, if you can, call personnel. Call 911 and do that. That's always your best technique, as early as possible.
What if you come across a car accident or a shooting victim and there's a lot of blood?
Yeah, so that's always tough. You know, I think first what I always tell people is if you've ever flown, if you ever have the depressurization and the oxygen comes down, they always tell you to put the oxygen on yourself. And so it's always important first to make sure you're safe. You know, so there's an accident, you know, don't put yourself in a position where you could get hurt or you maybe get hit by a car. If there's a shooting, gosh forbid, don't put yourself in a position where you may become a victim too. So that's first and foremost, I think. Second is if you can identify a piece of blood, you know, pressure is key. So if you're bleeding from the leg, you want to put pressure in the form of like a tourniquet, which is just taking a shirt and wrapping it as tight as you can around the leg closer to the, you know, I mean, we say proximal, but when I say that, it means if somebody has an issue in their ankle, you may want to look at the calf and put pressure there to kind of reduce blood flow to that part so it doesn't bleed as much. Again, same thing, call personnel. If somebody looks like they've hurt their neck, try not to move them. Let personnel do this. But if you see an obvious place that you can do without moving the body too much, it's probably not the worst thing to do. But again, a lot of people in these big injuries may have injuries to their spine, and moving them can be the most dangerous thing to do and could potentially kill somebody. So if you're not sure what to do, do what you can, but make sure you're safe first, I think, is probably the most important part.
And make a phone call.
Yeah, 911, just as quick as you can.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is our co-host. He's a general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. He's a SLU care general internist. A new study came out regarding the most unusual but common cause of death, or maybe the most surprising causes of death in all 50 states. Missouri and Illinois share the same surprising cause of death that's reported a lot more than in other states. It's nephritis. Tell me, what's nephritis?
So nephritis, anytime you see an itis in the medical world, it means inflammation. So nephritis is just basically inflammation of the kidney, not in the sense of having an infection typically, although I guess that is one type, but more commonly, we think of it more about different conditions where the body's immune system, for lack of a better term, thinks the kidney is a foreign object and attacks it as such. And so causes inflammation and very predictive changes. And it can lead to kidney failure. It can lead to really high blood pressure. You know, the biggest issue, if it's not treated, can lead pretty quickly to renal failure. The fact that it's high here, I'm not sure how to process it. When you look at this, sometimes it can just be kind of a math problem. Just kind of the random variation state to state may just aggregate that to be a little bit higher, or whether it speaks to something that's common in these two states, in Missouri and Illinois, I don't know. There's 1,000 different reasons why you have nephritis, and it's hard to really know.
I wanted to talk to you about the keto diet. Apparently, there's some new findings out of Yale University where researchers have found a side benefit to the ketogenic diet. It may subdue the flu virus.
Researchers at Yale University have found a side benefit to the ketogenic diet. It may subdue the flu virus. Keto has been gaining popularity in recent years as a diet choice for those looking to lose weight. It works by eliminating carbohydrates from the diet, forcing the body to turn from blood sugar to burning protein and fat to produce energy. But not only does ketosis jumpstart the metabolism, it activates gamma-delta T cells in the lungs. That causes enhanced mucus production in the airway, which helps trap the flu virus. Jim Michenevy, CBS News.
I guess two things here. First, let's talk about the impact of the keto diet on preventing the flu. Suspicious?
I mean, it's a pretty thin. There's a rationale for it, and I'll buy the rationale. These are the types of things of like you find something that has a little bit of signal in a study, and. You know, the best way to really get an answer is to do the proper science. And these are hard to do, and it's hard to, if you think about how to do this, you got to get a bunch of people, get them on the keto diet, and then get a bunch of people that are on a fake keto diet, compare how often they get flu, and then do some statistics on this. So you can imagine it's probably going to be hard to recruit people to do this because it sounds kind of not too appealing. So it's hard to know. I think if you're on a diet for any reason, I think – whether or not you do it, I think whether or not you get the flu is irrespective of that, but sure.
Well, then let's just talk about the keto.
I'm cynical, Fred. I'm sorry.
Oh, I can tell. Let's just talk about
skeptic. Let me say skeptic.
So. Okay. Let's just talk about the keto diet in general. What do you think about that?
You know, it's intriguing. And again, there's always a new diet fad and you know, there's some interesting theories behind this. So the big issue with keto diets is really this is what happens to our body when we're, for lack of a better term, starving. And so we convert a lot of our sugar and glucose and convert it basically to fatty acids. And so it's a way to, and we break down these fatty acids and they create ketones essentially. So, you know, there is some evidence for it and it's done in kind of small studies that are kind of intriguing and kind of appealing. Same thing on a mass scale. It's hard to know whether this is better than a calorie-restrictive diet or any other diet that's out there. One issue is if you don't do it well or if you're in ketosis for too long, there are some health risks with this. Ketones make your blood more acidic, and your blood has a very narrow range of what we call pH, which is a measure of acidity that optimizes function of all kinds of different things in our body. So, you know, when people are too acidic, that can be a medical emergency and something we have to deal with in the hospital setting. So if you don't know what you're doing or if you go overboard with it, just like with everything, it could create harm. So it's probably one of those things that works for some people. I think there's a good argument that carbohydrates in excess are probably not good for the body. So I think limiting that is not a horrible thing. This is, again, one of those things that where, like everything, moderation is probably okay. Excess is not. So we'll see.
Good deal.
Less skeptical on that one, Fred.
Good. All right. So we're out of time. Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Always. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a slew care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up, we'll talk about a new warning from doctors against kissing babies if you feel sick due to the risk of spreading the RSV virus. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. An estimated 57,000 children under the age of 5 are hospitalized each year due to RSV infections. That's according to the CDC. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. David Wathen. Dr. Wathen is a slew care pediatrician at SSM Health Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital. Dr. Wathen, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Wanted to talk with you about RSV. This is the perfect time of year for it. Tell us, what is RSV?
So RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus, is a virus which can be commonly equated to a respiratory infection or upper respiratory infection, and seems to cause significant illness in infants as well as elderly.
How common is it?
It's very common, especially this time of year. The most frequent time we see it in this area would be from approximately November through April.
And you say it's dangerous for infants as well as elderly?
Yes, that's correct.
What are the signs and symptoms?
So the signs and symptoms, it usually begins as a runny nose, usually quite profuse congestion associated with that, and a fairly harsh cough. Those symptoms will then progress over several days and can lead to some difficulty breathing as well as eating and drinking, especially for infants.
How dangerous can this get in some infants?
In some infants, especially those at high risk, and that would include those who have underlying heart conditions or lung conditions, it can become quite severe to the point that some infants need to be intubated and on ventilators.
So hospitalization in some cases?
Yes, of course.
How do you know when to call the doctor about this?
There are a few symptoms you look for. Like I mentioned, the two things we worry about the most is dehydration and difficulty breathing. For dehydration, because the child becomes so congested and ill, they don't want to drink very well. So they may become very dehydrated with sunken eyes, dry lips, and may not urinate as often as they should. A rule of thumb is usually they should have one urination within 8 hours. The other concern is difficulty breathing. That runny nose, congestion, and cough can progress. And a child can then develop tachypnea, or rapid breathing, and that's breathing usually greater than about 50 to 60 times a minute. It can also have what we call retractions, which is where the muscles around the ribs and stomach will kind of have this appearance of sucking in. And then one of the other signs is nasal flaring, where the child appears that they're really trying to suck in air and their nose will suck in.
What's the treatment for RSV?
Unfortunately, there's no specific treatment. So what we do is called supportive care. In infants, we will often try to suction their nose out. Of course, in the hospital, we have suctioning devices, but those can also be found at home or at your local drugstore. We suction out that mucus. We try to keep the child hydrated as best we can, so offering frequent fluids and especially small amounts frequently. And then Tylenol or Motrin, as long as the child is over 2 months of age and your doctor has approved that, they can have that to help them lower any fevers as well as feel better.
Is there a vaccine to prevent RSV?
Unfortunately, no, not at this time. Several companies are looking at that and doing some studies, but we have no vaccine at this time.
We're talking with Dr. David Wath, and he's a SLU care pediatrician at SSM Health Cardinal Glenn and Children's Hospital. Dr. Wath, how is RSV transmitted?
So as I noted, the coughing and sneezing is pretty frequent. Once that occurs, the RSV or virus will be spread via that route, and then it's spread from hands to other doorknobs, other surfaces, things like that. Once that is contacted by the individual and then hands, you know, especially in a child's mouth or around their nose, they can then become infected. So we frequently see this gain rapid traction in daycare settings and other places like that.
What are the symptoms in adults who get it?
In adults, it can be quite a severe cold, there will be similar symptoms, congestion, runny nose, coughing, which can last for quite a while. Most healthy adults will be able to get past that after approximately a week or so. But as I mentioned, some elderly will have quite a severe reaction from that and have difficulty clearing that infection and may also require hospitalization.
So then what would be your advice to adults as we get into this holiday season where you're seeing a lot of relatives, a lot of kids, a lot of babies?
So the biggest and most important aspect is to wash your hands or use hand sanitizer. Use those frequently. That is the most common way to transmit this virus from one object to another. And then also, if there is an infant or other person, elderly person who is around and you are not feeling well or have some of these symptoms, it's best just to stay away. I frequently tell families that, you know, this is the time to use Skype and FaceTime if you really want to see the baby or your loved one. But it's best just to stay away until your symptoms pass.
And tell us again which children are at the highest risk for RSV?
So infants are at the highest risk, mostly under the age of a year, but it can affect kids up to approximately 2 years of age. The ones we worry about the most are those who have an immune deficiency, also those with lung or airway abnormalities or heart problems.
And if you're a parent of one of those at-risk children, what should you be doing to protect your child?
So again, it'll be washing your hands and washing your child's hands frequently, and then asking your loved ones and friends that if they do have any of those symptoms to please stay away until they're feeling better. And if you do have any concerns about that your child may have contracted RSV or have any of the symptoms that I alluded to, then to call your pediatrician and discuss that with them.
Dr. Wath, any other illnesses prevalent right now during this season?
Yes, this is the time of what we deem respiratory season. So we have quite a few patients that are admitted to the hospital this time of year. RSV is one of the more common viruses this time, but there are also many others, including enterovirus, rhinovirus, coronavirus, adenovirus. So we see quite a few of those illnesses. Which can have similar symptoms to RSV.
So when do you know to seek help if you think you might have something like that?
They'll have very similar symptoms. So a lot of congestion, rhinorrhea, coughing, and the precautions are the same as well. So if the child is not drinking and you fear maybe becoming dehydrated, or you have concerns about their breathing, with them breathing very quickly, over 50 to 60 times a minute, having retractions, which is that sucking in of the muscles around the ribs and stomach, or if they have that nasal flaring. Those are all similar concerns with all of those viruses, we would encourage you to speak with a physician if you're concerned about any of those.
And since you say they're viruses, what sort of treatment is there? Is there a treatment or is it just supportive?
No, there's been lots of different medications and other treatments that have been tried in the past, and none of them really seem to bear out when looked at. Some things that have been tried, including albuterol or breathing treatments, steroids, as well as antibiotics, and none of those seem to help with this illness at all. So those are items and treatments which we usually try to avoid at this time of year.
So, Dr. Wathen, your final comment here. What's your advice to everyone as we're into this holiday season?
My advice is make sure you wash your hands and keep hand sanitizer with you. And if you're feeling ill, take others into consideration. And it's best just to stay at home until you're feeling better, and then going out and seeing your loved ones.
Dr. Wathen, thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Dr. David Wathen is a SLU care pediatrician at SSM Health Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital. Coming up next, we'll talk about holiday depression, grief, and stress. If you have any of those feelings, you're not alone. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. For most people, the holiday season is a fun time of the year, but for some, it's a time that's filled with sadness, self-reflection, loneliness, and anxiety. Here to talk with us about that is Cassie Wiklensky. Cassie is a clinical social worker at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. Cassie, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about holiday depression and stress. Cassie, how common is it?
Grief during the holidays is very, very common. You know, those of us who are grieving a loss of someone or even a way of life miss our old traditions, miss our old loved ones more during the holiday season because we're reminded so often with traditions and musics and smells and decorations that a lot of times those usually joyful things can be painful reminders.
So what are some of the symptoms we need to be on the lookout for?
You know, isolating more than usual, and when I mean isolating, I don't mean only physically, but verbally. If you're reaching out to someone and they're not talking about what's going on with them or not being honest or sharing their feelings, we need to be concerned about that. Maybe overindulging in alcohol, you know, alone or even in a social setting. Eating and sleeping changes, you know, we always just want to look for changes in mood and any kind of daily activities. If someone is not functioning the way they were functioning 2 weeks ago, a month ago, and you just see a lot of dramatic changes in their daily lifestyle, that is what is of concern.
You mentioned grief as a cause. What are some of the other causes?
You know, grief, and that's kind of all-encompassing. Of course, when I say grief, we think of losing someone, a loved one, or someone that we have spent lots of years of tradition with. But it can be loss of a job, loss of a house, loss of a certain lifestyle. You know, when we have financial stressors over the holidays, that can be really taxing on people who are expecting a certain type of holiday or want to provide a certain type of holiday for their families. So, you know, stress can be revolved around loss of relationship, but also loss of lifestyle.
Is there a difference between holiday blues and holiday depression?
I think that they're pretty much the same. I mean, blues can usually, I think, you know, it's certainly not a clinical term, but I think when people say blues, I think that it might be more focused on just a few down times or certain situations where you're feeling down, where depression is probably longer term, where it could last several weeks, even up to several months, and that, you know, you're probably looking at symptoms that are more severe and a lifestyle change that's more severe.
We're talking with Cassie Wiklensky. She's a clinical social worker at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. Let's talk about some tips for coping with holiday stress and depression and grief. What are some of the things we should be doing?
First of all, be kind to yourself. Know that if you are grieving at the time of the holidays, that grieving is actually a part of healing, and it's something that you just need to move through. So don't feel guilty about it. Don't feel guilty about bringing other people down. Allow yourself to feel it. But also allow yourself to set some boundaries and give permission to yourself to say no to things. You may not be up to doing all of the social activities that you did last year or the year before. It's okay to create an escape or even an excuse to maybe, bow out of some of the social situations that may be too painful for you. Keep some of the similar traditions, but also create new ones. Be creative and, you know, maybe you want to have something different to eat. Maybe you want to all meet and gather at a different location. Some families choose to travel during the holidays because it feels different and it's setting a new tradition while still honoring your memories. And of course, don't ever be afraid to ask for help. Reaching out when you're struggling is really important, and there are so many professional people and people in everyone's lives that care about them that would like to provide that support and help.
Where can you go to get help?
There are lots of hotlines that you can reach out to that are national hotlines. The National Suicide Hotline is 24/7. Behavioral Health Response here in St. Louis is a 24/7 hotline. You can present in any emergency room of any hospital, and there is always mental health people on staff that are there to help and evaluate and see what your need may be. And SSM Healthcare Behavioral Health is always, you know, around to help with any need at phone call or in the emergency room.
How important is getting enough sleep in dealing with issues like this?
Getting enough sleep is very, very important. A change in sleep pattern, of course, is one of the identifiers for depression. So it's the right amount of sleep, as you said. Too much sleep is not good, and not enough sleep is not good. It's hard to function, and it's hard to, you know, have a stable mood when you're either lacking sleep or you're sleeping too much and not functioning.
What about exercise?
Exercise is great. It's a great natural form of stress relief and coping. Changing body temperature has been proven to really help with mood swings and intensive depression. And so getting out and getting moving is really, really beneficial. And we always say if you can spend a little bit of time outside each day, no matter what the temperature, it's very good for you.
How about during this time of year when it gets dark so much earlier? Could that be part of the problem?
Absolutely. Seasonal depression is very prevalent. It's very real. I think more people suffer from it than the statistics even say. And it is hard when days are shorter and you're coming home from work in the dark or you're leaving in the dark. And daylight and sunlight and vitamin D are very important for those that suffer from it. So being outside is very important for everyone, especially people that suffer from seasonal affective depression.
Cassie, what if financial stress has a lot to do with this? Any tips there?
I just think, again, being kind to yourself, a lot of this goes back to giving yourself permission not to be perfect and knowing what your resources are and what you are able to do and making your expectations doable. Being honest with people and letting people and loved ones know that, you know, this is what you are able to do this year. It may not be the same as other years and, you know, setting your expectations where you are not setting yourself up to fail.
What about if there's a source of family conflict that always comes up during the holidays? What do you do then?
Yeah, there can be family conflicts. Again, set boundaries. If there are certain situations that you know are not healthy for you or your family, it's okay to skip things, to excuse yourself, to not be present if you don't think that that's a healthy situation. Also, if you can expect some kind of conflict or issues to occur, to maybe, you know, hit those before the gathering. If you need to pull a family member aside, make a phone call and have a conversation about things that have happened in the past and kind of agree to some rules and standards of your getting together this time, that's perfectly fine. I think the more we communicate and talk about things and set boundaries and standards for each other, the better.
So I guess the basic message here to listeners is it's okay to have these feelings. You just need to deal with it in some way.
Absolutely. Do not beat yourself up because you are grieving. It's part of the healing. And do not feel like you are bringing other people down because you are grieving. Allow yourself to feel it and allow yourself to set boundaries to be in situations where you can enjoy it. And if you need to excuse yourself, that's okay too.
Cassie, thanks a lot. Anything else you want to add?
That's it. Thank you so much for the time.
Cassie Wiklensky is a clinical social worker at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. And if you're feeling depressed and need help, please call SSM Health's central intake line at 314-344-6700. The number again is 314-344-6700. Coming up, it's that time of the year again where we're not the only ones taking a vacation. Our diets are too. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Okay, so the holidays are officially here. How you doing on your diet so far? Here to talk with us about that is Sheetal Mehta. Sheetal is a registered dietitian at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in St. Charles. Sheetal, thanks for talking to us again.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me over.
Great. It's great to have you again. You know, we've survived one big food holiday, Thanksgiving, just a couple days ago. We've got a couple more coming up, Christmas and New Year's. Wanted to talk with you about the holidays and how we can stay true to our diets over these times. What sort of advice can you give us?
So, Fred, one thing we have to always keep in mind, holidays are special occasions. You know, it's a lot about meeting your families, your special friends, and being thankful of all we have. So a lot of times we feel like if we enjoy during these holidays, we are basically jeopardizing our diet. I highly encourage people to kind of get that mindset out of their mind, thinking this as enjoyment. As long as you keep in mind that it's three holidays that you are going to overindulge, I think you can do fine. What is a problem is the continued eating and the excessive splurging all the time because we have stash of cookies, candies, you know, special treats at work, at home, and that we are indulging in. That could possibly be a little expensive in terms of our health. But just enjoying those three holidays probably should still be something each and every individual should deserve.
And in addition to those three holidays, there's also all the holiday parties that are coming up as well. What are your tips when we go to a holiday party? What should we do? What should we keep in mind when we're going through the food line?
So one thing I always say is if you, for whatever, you know, whatever you, a person has in mind, most of us are really careful about our weight. And so keep in mind during this time, think of weight management rather than weight loss. Focus on mindful eating, and some of the strategies to keep in perspective is just because you're going for a big dinner in the evening does not mean you need to skip your meals throughout the day. You could eat more healthier. You could eat smaller portions during the daytime to allow a little extra indulgence in the evening, but skipping would just lead you to overeat and make choices that may not be the healthiest. Always have a plan for portion control in mind. Typically for dinners during holidays, there is a lot of drinking involved. There's appetizers, sometimes big dinners. So have a set portion guide in your mind. If you are going to drink, what are the choices you're going to make and how many? Typically, I always recommend that if you're having an alcoholic beverages, go with a small glass of wine, or if you're going to do some hard liquor, make sure the mixers are more the lighter club sodas or water rather than the high-calorie ones. Always alternate with water in between your alcoholic beverages so you are not drinking quite many. When it comes to appetizers, try to, again, focus on what's baked, broiled, grilled, what are more vegetable or fruit-based appetizers that you can indulge in. If you are going to indulge in some of the more richer ones, then use the strategy of a small plate, which is becoming very popular. And so that's kind of the strategy to keep in mind. And always keep a perspective of what's there for dinner so you can save some room for dinner. Often we eat a lot when we first get to a party, and then there's a lot of good food at dinner time, so then we overindulge in that. So have a overall perspective on what all type of food that's there, rather than just eat what you see. Often we like certain things more than the others, but if we fill up our plate with everything that we walk up, when it's a buffet or something like that, we end up eating things that we didn't care for. So always take a good look at what's offered food-wise and then make the choice that is the best for you and what your palate is asking for.
What about the color of our plate? Not the actual physical color of the plate, but once we've got it filled with food, what would you like it to look like?
Always make it look more colorful, you know, and most people do have a concept of, you know, or at least they have seen it, the concept of plate method, you know, where a plate should be divided into four parts. Each part is designated for a specific food, fruit, vegetable, protein, and your starch. Which is like a grain or a starchy vegetable. So if you keep a concept like that, so let's say Christmas time, if there's a salad or any kind of vegetables, fill a fourth of your plate with that. A fourth of your plate should be some sort of a fruit-based item. So it could be a fruit in your salad, or it could be a fruit on your chicken or on your ham. A fourth of your plate should be a lean protein, preferably. So ham is, again, a holiday protein. Turkey is a holiday protein, and those can be pretty lean if prepared appropriately, like baked or grilled or broiled. And then a fourth should be your grain. So don't feel like you can't have a potato or a sweet potato or a dinner roll. So choose which one do you want and then have that as a fourth of your plate. Make it colorful because it's always very eye-appealing and always gives you the best nutrients your body needs. Just because it's holiday time doesn't mean you should not get the correct fuel for your body. So when you choose foods from these four food groups, you're probably sure to get most of the nutrients your body needs.
We're talking with Sheetal Mehta. She's a registered dietitian at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in St. Charles. Sheetal, is it okay to overindulge as long as we're actively exercising?
Fred, it all depends on how often overindulgence is. If it's the day of Christmas or day of New Year's, you know, overindulgence, I believe that's okay. One thing I always recommend is don't skip the exercise. A lot of times we pack in so much during this month of November and December with so many family events happening, work parties, buying gifts for a lot of people, and we go overboard and very overwhelmed. So a lot of times exercise is a thing that goes away from our schedule. And so that is not the attitude we need to have. We always want to try to get in some exercise, modify it. You know, if you have time for 20 minutes of walking before you go to a mall to shop, work on that. Or if you have something that you can do at home for 10 or 15 minutes. So the rule of thumb is rather than think of it as I'm going to exercise more so I can eat two pieces of pie, it should be, well, let me exercise throughout the winter months, these couple of holiday months, and then the day of Christmas, I will indulge into the treats that may be a special occasion treat.
Good deal. Sheetal, let's talk leftovers. I know we just had Thanksgiving, and many of us have leftovers in our refrigerator. How long can we safely keep leftovers? And when it comes to parties and those big events, how long can food be left on the table before it has to be refrigerated?
And that, again, you know, if it is meat item or something that's colder item, typically, you know, about 2 hours. Under 2 hours, it's fine, safe. Generally, if it's kept in a warmer, like your meats are in a warmer, they can be good for a couple more hours. Anytime, what my suggestion is, rather than serving everything that you've made, serve in smaller quantities. So if something is cold, just take out small quantities at a time, especially when you have an open house type of an event, which might go on for 4 hours, 3-4 hours or more. Just bring out small quantities at a time and then refill it as and how you need it. So that way you can assure that the temperature is correct, whether it's meat, which should be a certain temperature, and cold items, which would be a certain temperature. As far as leftovers go, you know, it's always a good practice that as long as it's not been sitting out for too long, let's say if the food has been sitting out for 4+ hours, I would recommend if it's cold foods, like a refrigerated or items, or if it needs to be hot foods, if the temperature hasn't been maintained, then it's better not to use it or and discard it. But if the temperature's been maintained, then it can be either packed in small containers and either kept in refrigerator for a couple of days to be used up, or freeze it. If you don't think you're going to eat it in the next 2 days, then put it in small containers and freeze it to be used later on.
Sheetal, that's all great information. Thanks so much for joining us again this year.
All right. Thank you, Fred.
Sheetal Mehta is a registered dietitian at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in St. Charles. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If you want to hear parts of this show again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join us again next Saturday at this same time for another edition of Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.